But let me introduce our speaker. Elizabeth Waltman is the COO at South Texas Blood and Tissue Center. A brief history about her. My dear friend, Madeline Justice, who's on the call today, she's with Traveling Blender, and she actually introduced me and Elizabeth, me to Elizabeth. Elizabeth presented at the San Antonio chapter luncheon on July 28th, 2015. Wow. And through that introduction wow. and that talk and Elizabeth's gracious invitation, we moved to our new meeting home in the Donor Pavilion at BioBridge Global, which is the parent organization for South Texas Blood and Tissue. So we have loved it. We moved there in February 2016, and our last meeting there was February 2020. And we hope we'll go back there someday. We hope everything will go away and we'll be able to go back there one day. So Elizabeth is a dedicated member of the transfusion medicine industry. Since 1979, Elizabeth has worked to improve the availability, safety, and quality of blood products provided to patients. She has served in numerous blood center operational roles, beginning as a phlebotomist. I wanted to make sure I said that right. And now as Chief Operating Officer at South Texas Blood and Tissue Center. Elizabeth has served on various industry, you can tell I'm reaching for another page here, industry committees and boards, including her tenure with South Central Association of Blood Banks as president. In addition to being passionate about serving, about saving lives, she loves her husband, Paul, her animals, and her Ducati. Who knew? Who knew? There is another side of you, Elizabeth, I had no idea about. And I'll bet you, you are one fierce bike rider.
Right? I am.
Okay, yeah. So we promised you this surprise groundbreaking announcement, and Elizabeth will wrap up a few minutes earlier, and we'll introduce our mystery guest who will give us some exciting news at the end of this meeting. Okay, so take it away, Elizabeth.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much, Linda. It's always great to be part of this group and to talk about
guys.
My organization and the work that we're doing in the community. You know, South Texas Blood and Tissue Center has been part of the South Texas community since 1973. And since then we've grown and now we're part of BioBridge Global, which is actually an offshoot of South Texas Blood and Tissue Center rather than the other way around. But our primary focus in the community is to be the community blood provider. And we provide blood to over 100 hospitals and healthcare organizations throughout South Texas, distributing well over 300,000 units of blood every year to patients who need it. The time that I wanted to spend with you today is to tell you a little bit about convalescent plasma as one of the only treatments available right now for COVID-19. You know, blood centers are uniquely positioned to play this role in attacking COVID-19. And that's because we have access to blood donors, to people who want to make a difference and to help others. And so convalescent plasma is one of the ways that you know, the average citizen can help somebody who is suffering from the most severe forms of COVID-19. Convalescent plasma is plasma that is derived or is collected from individuals who have come in contact with the COVID-19 virus. So some people, as we've seen in the media, could have COVID-19 and not even know that they have it. Thus, the wearing of the mask and the social distancing or physical distancing, whatever your preference is for that term. And then those that essentially had the most severe forms of it where they're in the hospital and unfortunately on a ventilator. And in fact, one of the stories that I wanted to share with you is about one of the patients and his family that have come to be part of the South Texas family. And that is the story of Barbara and George Silva. So Barbara actually called us one day and said that her husband needed convalescent plasma, that he had COVID-19 and that he was going on a respirator. And both of her daughters had had COVID. They had very mild cases, but they had been tested. They had tested positive for COVID. And so her daughters came in, one of her daughters came in and was able to donate at that time. We made sure that George got a unit of convalescent plasma, and instead of his disease progressing to a point where his family would have lost him, George was able to go home, and actually he's now a blood donor and a convalescent plasma donor, as well as both of Barbara's daughters. And Barbara is actually helping us out now as one of our employees. So you never know who you're going to help and how they're going to return the favor. But this story is playing out over and over again throughout the United States. Blood centers, with the as a request by the FDA, came together back in April of 2020 in order to start producing convalescent plasma on a large-scale manufacturing, as a large-scale manufacturing process. I don't think any of us at that time knew how important it would be. We just knew that we had to do something and that blood centers could help. So convalescent plasma has been used in the past. In fact, most recently, one of the stories about the use of convalescent plasma was with the Ebola virus. And I think many of us can remember when Ebola was, there was a patient that was up in Dallas, Fort Worth. And that individual who had Ebola had set off a string of stories that I think unnerved many of us about Ebola being in the United States. We were able to collect plasma from someone who had had Ebola here, and that plasma was actually used to treat someone else who had Ebola, an active case of Ebola. Not only that, but the use of convalescent plasma goes back as early as the beginning of the century, of the 1900s. And it has been used for diphtheria, it's been used for measles, it's been used for many different diseases as a treatment because nothing else was available. Unfortunately, there haven't been a lot of clinical trials that have proven emphatically one way or another that that convalescent plasma is the go-all be-all. And so when we started this, adventure with the FDA in order to produce convalescent plasma, which was the whole program was sponsored by the Department HHS, Health and Human Services, as well as BARDA, we were hoping that it would help, but we needed a large-scale clinical trial in order to be able to prove that. And so Mayo came into the picture as the administrator of an expanded access program. And so Mayo was the central point for the clinical trial. Since that trial began back in April, over 90,000 patients have received convalescent plasma. And while the results are not spectacular, they are significant. In fact, they're so significant that we've moved from an expanded access program to an expanded use program, which means that we can continue to collect and produce and transfuse convalescent plasma because we believe that it does have beneficial results. I want to step back just a minute and give you a little bit more background before I go into where we're going to go with convalescent plasma into the future. So one of the things about the clinical trial with Mayo was that they wanted to accomplish two things. First of all, they wanted to show that it was safe, that essentially people who were already battling for their lives with COVID, that it would not cause additional harm to them. And second of all, they wanted to show that it would be effective, that it wasn't just giving them a unit of plasma, but that it was actually doing what we thought it would do. So first of all, is convalescent plasma safe? And after transfusing over 20,000 units of convalescent plasma early on in the expanded access program, Mayo was able to demonstrate that convalescent plasma was safe. In fact, it's as safe as any other plasma product. And in fact, anyone who wants to donate convalescent plasma, they have to actually be qualified as a blood donor first before they can donate plasma. So it is a safe product. Is it safe as fresh frozen plasma or any other type of plasma product? The other thing is, does it actually work? And what the study has shown is that there's statistical significance that they can see with individuals who received convalescent plasma, that they have a higher ability to survive than those who did not receive it. Now, this is not a double-blind clinical trial like you would see in many clinical trials, and that's because, quite frankly, we just don't have the time to set that sort of thing up. But there were over, like I said, there were over 90,000 patients that were enrolled in the clinical trial. There was over, I'm trying to think, there were over 1,300 different hospitals that were enrolled. And of course, thousands and thousands of units of convalescent plasma were transfused. And what they found is that the earlier individuals were transfused with convalescent plasma, the better their outcomes. They also saw that those who received convalescent plasma had better outcomes than those who didn't. And they also were able to show that those that had a higher titer rate, the plasma that had a higher titer rate, so a larger concentration of antibodies against COVID, did better than those that had a lesser amount of antibodies in the plasma. One of the challenges that we had early on with producing convalescent plasma and providing it to hospitals was the accessibility to testing for the antibodies. This has all happened very, very quickly. In fact, I don't know that I've ever seen something quite this large and complex and far-reaching addressed as quickly as it's been addressed. And by that, I mean we went from essentially having no test for antibodies to COVID to having numerous tests. And one of the challenges that we had, and I think many people can remember, is that there were so many tests out there that it seemed like everybody who had a laboratory was trying to put together a test for antibodies. And the FDA began to see that some of those tests had not been qualified very well. So what the FDA did was they said, okay, in order for you to say that this particular test will meet, that it can identify the antibodies, you're going to have to go through some more arduous testing and be able to prove that. As a result, we went from lots of different tests to a smaller number that are available now that we feel are more comprehensive, that they meet the criteria for ensuring that the concentration of antibodies that are in the plasma will actually be efficacious for the patients. So luckily here at South Texas, because of relationships that we have throughout not only Texas, but the United States, we were able to partner with a company that's not very far down the road, X Biotech in Austin, Texas. And they developed a test, a titer test, where we could titer our convalescent plasma or our donors. We could do a titer test really quickly, relatively quickly, I'll say, so that we could start providing convalescent plasma for patients. And within 4 days after the FDA came to the blood centers and said, hey, we need your help, we were able to provide our first unit of convalescent plasma to a patient in Odessa, Texas. The second unit of convalescent plasma went to a patient right here in San Antonio. And that test was used for some time until Abbott produced, until we got the test from Abbott where we could do a more, a larger throughput of testing in order to identify individuals who have convalescent or who have COVID. So we've gone from essentially not having any convalescent plasma at all, having a need for convalescent plasma, to where we are today. So right now, each and every day, we're collecting about 100 units of convalescent plasma and for patients throughout not only South Texas, but also the United States. Early on, BARDA, Health and Human Services, they were very concerned about continued upswings in the need for convalescent plasma. So we had that first bump that came after Memorial Day. And I think, Linda, you might remember that, where it looked like we were going to see a downturn in the amount of plasma or the amount of patients who had COVID. And then we had Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And then within 3 to 4 weeks after Memorial Day, there was a huge upswing in the number of cases. And in fact, as a result of that, many communities started closing down businesses again and saying that some of the opportunities that we had to get back into the workplace and into schools, they essentially said, that's not really a good idea right now. Right here in San Antonio and throughout Texas, you were all wearing masks as a result of that big uptick. We saw another big uptick in July where more cases were identified. There was still a problem with the amount of testing that was available. And so as we began, or as we continued our conversations with the government, they asked the blood centers to prepare for continued upticks in the number of cases that we might see of COVID. In fact, they've asked all of the blood centers throughout the United States to help stockpile over 200,000 units of convalescent plasma, as well as having their own what I'm calling a reasonable stockpile here within the blood center. And so we looked at what we would need. We looked at how many donors we would need in order to accomplish that. And we looked at how we could help the rest of the United States start stockpiling 200,000 units for the uptick in COVID cases. So where we are right now is, like I said, we're collecting about 100 doses per day. We've been able to stockpile somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,000 doses of convalescent plasma right here in San Antonio for the use for patients here in the South Texas area. And we're beginning to send plasma to areas throughout the United States where we can stockpile larger or amass larger stockpiles of plasma. We're not the only ones that are doing that. Every blood center in the United States is helping along with this. So it's something that we're preparing for the future. Now, why are you doing this, Elizabeth? Why are you collecting more plasma than you're using on a daily basis? Well, the reason is because there is no effective treatment other than convalescent plasma right here for COVID-19, which is unfortunate. When you think about the people who are suffering from COVID-19, it would be great to say that we have a treatment for it. But this novel virus has proved to be quite the adversary. The treatments that are available are really just to manage the symptoms. There is remdesivir, which for people who have COVID, it helps shorten the period of time that they're suffering from the virus, but it's really not a cure for it. So until that happens, convalescent plasma is the go-to. The other thing to think about is, I know a lot of people are like, well, as soon as we get a vaccine, we're not going to have to worry about COVID any longer, right? We're going to get this thing whipped. We believe there's going to need to be three things in place in order to truly overcome COVID-19 and to where convalescent plasma is not going to be needed at the same volume that it is now. One of them is that we will need the vaccine. Now, I think we're all very hopeful that there will be a vaccine in place in a very short period of time. And believe me, I have my fingers crossed as much as anyone else. And we will see. Time will tell. But we don't have that in place yet. The other thing that we don't have in place yet is adequate testing. I know that the government is working furiously on that, to have testing in place so that everyone can get tested. But we're not there yet. And we'll have some more information on that in a minute. But testing is going to be something that we're going to have to continue to have in place in order to be able to move forward. And then finally is treatments. So how are we going to treat people who have COVID. We already know that even if there's a vaccine in place, there are people who are not going to take the vaccine for whatever reason. Either it's not, they don't have it yet, or they're one of those individuals that say, I'm not getting vaccinated no matter what. Mm-hmm. And so people are still going to get COVID and they're still going to need treatments. And the only thing that's available is convalescent plasma. So as we look into the future, until those three things are addressed, where there's a vaccine, there's adequate testing, and there are other treatments, convalescent plasma is going to be the go-to. So the thing that I, the last thing that I wanted to talk about with regards to convalescent, I'm trying to get to my next slide, sorry, if I can do that. The final thing that I wanted to mention about CCP, and then I would be more than happy to take some questions, is that whatever blood centers do, however we're able to help the community, is dependent on the community. We cannot create, it's not like we can go to the store and buy a little bit of albumin and a few proteins and a few antibodies over here and mix it all together and make convalescent plasma. Convalescent plasma comes from individuals who have either had COVID-19 or come in contact with the virus. And so if we're going to be able to continue to fulfill the mission to make sure that there's enough convalescent plasma for patients today, and you know, we're looking at the winter months and we're all, at least I'm on the edge of my seat wondering how the disease is going to progress through the winter months. Mm-hmm. We're going to have donors that are going to step up and donate convalescent plasma. Foremost, there's two things that these donors are going to have. One is they're going to have to qualify as a blood donor. So they're going to have to meet the qualifications of any other blood donor, like we were talking about O negatives. They're going to have to meet the same qualifications as someone who's coming in and donating O negative, or one of our brothers in arms donors, or one of our platelet donors. They have to meet the exact same qualifications. And then second of all, the FDA has stated that they're going to have to meet certain testing requirements going forward. Now, the good news is because some additional tests have been developed that are very specific, we're going to be moving to what we're calling a good faith donor. So someone in good faith who believes they have COVID, we will take them as a plasma donor and then we will test them on the back end. Before, we were having to get all of this qualified before they donated. But now, because of the testing that we have in place, we'll be able to do that on the back end and we will be taking their word in good faith that they meet the qualifications as a COVID convalescent plasma donor. So that's something that we'll be doing in the future. But again, the only way we can do that is if people who have had COVID or tested positive for COVID step up and say, hey, I wanna help somebody else that's suffering from this disease. So with that, I'll take questions because I know that some have popped up on the chat board. So first one is, was there a big uptick from Labor Day? We're beginning to see that now, that when you go to the San Antonio or the Bexar County website where they're tracking COVID cases, we're beginning to see those upticks, not only here in Texas, but throughout the United States. So again, we're Americans, right? And we want to do what we want to do when we want to do it. But this disease is no joke. And all you have to do is talk to people who have had family members who have been in COVID or in the hospitals and have had COVID. So wear your mask, do what you're supposed to do so that we can keep the amount of cases down. Let's see. How do community blood banks work together? That's a really good question. So community blood banks throughout the United States, we see each other in partners in saving lives. So early on, one of the things that happened was blood centers like ours that were able to mobilize fairly quickly. We were sending convalescent plasma wherever it was needed, whenever it was needed. Whoever was first on the list was the one that got the convalescent plasma. And at times we would run short and other blood centers would help us, and other blood centers would run short and we would send plasma for their patients. So blood centers, we look at each patient as a life we want to save, and we maximize that gift to make sure that those individuals get what they need when they need it. No, you're not supposed to be seeing slides, David, just my pretty face. I figured everybody's kind of like PowerPointed to death, and so I thought I would just talk to you today and have more of a conversation. So someone's asking about the Bob McCullough story that made the news today. So Bob McCullough is a longtime donor who's donated 110 donations. I'm sorry, the brain cell just died there for a second. Linda's nodding her head. Thank you, Linda. 110 times. And, you know, we have donors that have donated 100 gallons of blood, plasma, or platelets. And these are individuals who, you know, like Bob, they have made giving blood one of the main ways that they give back to the community. I think anyone who has had a family member in the hospital or, you know, that has had a traumatic event and needed blood, it can be a devastating experience as you're waiting for that blood to show up. And what a amazing experience it is when they receive the blood and all of a sudden their face starts pinking up. Or anyone who's had a family member going through cancer treatments and their platelet levels just drop through the floor and you touch them and they start bleeding, bruising, and they get that unit of platelets and all of a sudden they can have a life again. They can go and do what they need to do. Blood is truly a magic gift. But again, the only way that we can make it available is if people in the community like Bob step up and donate and make it a priority. I mean, 110 donations, each donation can save up to 3 lives. And in the case of convalescent plasma, depending on the height and weight of the donor, they could save up to 5 people's lives with convalescent plasma. So you're truly making a difference, helping somebody to have another day with their family or maybe a lifetime with their family. It's a huge gift. Let's see, how does donating convalescent plasma through a local blood bank differ from donating convalescent plasma to a plasma center? So this is a really good question. Thank you, Jim. So convalescent plasma donated to a plasma center, we both focus on helping people out, but we do it in a very different way. So when you donate plasma at a plasma center, that plasma goes to a fractionation plant where it is broken down into parts. When you donate convalescent plasma at a plasma center, the end product is going to be a hyperimmunoglobulin, and that's pharmaceutical is used as prophylaxis. So when you think about it, I remember at one time my brother, he contracted hepatitis, and we believed that he had what they used to call infectious hepatitis, which is hepatitis A. And so my mother trotted us all down to the doctor, and we all got a shot of IVIG to help to prevent us from getting the hepatitis from my brother. So that is a prophylactic dose. It's not, once you have whatever the virus is or the illness is, it's not going to prevent you or it's not going to cure you. It will just help prevent you from getting it. So that's what the plasma centers do with their convalescent plasma. What the blood centers do with convalescent plasma is we are an arm-to-arm facilitator. It comes from one arm, which is the donor. We take that plasma, we freeze it, and as soon as the hospital says we need a unit of plasma for a patient, that plasma goes directly to the hospital and it is infused into the patient. So we are an arm-to-arm solution for the patient. versus the plasma center, which produces a pharmaceutical, a fractionated pharmaceutical that is a prophylactic product at this time. We really don't know at what point what great treatment is going to be developed by some extraordinary group of scientists out there. But at some point when that happens, what we do today, you know, we may not need to do that. We may not need convalescent plasma because someone has a effective treatment that's more effective than convalescent plasma. But until that happens, we really are, if you've got a patient in the hospital, convalescent plasma is what you want for that patient. A question, how much plasma does a patient need? So at the very beginning, they were giving one unit. So one unit is 200 mLs. Now I believe the standard dose is two units or 400 mLs, 400 cc's of convalescent plasma. As we get more information, that dosage may change, but that's what it is right now. Ray asked, I referred to the government several times in reference to directing our efforts. What government agencies were directing these efforts? So one of them was HHS, Health and Human Services, and then FDA, of course, is the regulatory agency that is regulating how the convalescent plasma is collected, what the requirements are for efficacy, and the standards by which we provide it, manufacture and provide it to the hospitals. So those are the main agencies that we're working with right now. Linda asked, how many blood banks are set up to provide convalescent plasma across the country? So I believe with the exception of hospital blood banks, I would say probably 95% of the community blood banks across the country are set up to collect and provide convalescent plasma. I know that there's a couple of small blood banks that they just don't have access to readily available testing. They just don't have the resources. And so what they're doing is that they're depending on other blood banks to provide the convalescent plasma for them. There are some hospital blood banks, hospital located blood banks that are getting their convalescent plasma from the community blood banks in their town. In the United States right now, there are 58 community blood centers as well as the American Red Cross. The community blood centers comprise about 60%, a little bit over 60%, I think it's 62% of all the blood that's collected and transfused throughout the United States. The rest of the blood that's collected and transfused throughout the United States either comes from hospital blood banks, which is a very small percentage. I think it's somewhere around 2%. And then the remainder comes from the American Red Cross. So South Texas Blood and Tissue Center is considered a community blood bank. All right, Linda, I'm not seeing, are there any more questions? I'm trying to see. Oh, there we go, let me go back up. So Frank says that his son had it. It was a very mild case. He's 24 years old and you're having an issue with trying to get him to donate plasma. Any words of advice that might move the needle for this age range? I wish I had one particular sentence or paragraph that I could just print out and send it and that would move the needle on this particular generation. We do have a challenge with individuals that are between the ages of, I would say, 20 to 30 year olds to become the same type of blood donors like Bob McCullough. And I don't have that one particular thing, but what I would say in the case of your son is that I think if we put a face on every patient who has COVID-19 and is suffering from it, I would ask your son to think of the person who has had the most impact and that if that person wasn't in his life, how much his, if the person wasn't alive, how much his life would be diminished, and what he would do in order to save that person's life. And if he could see that person's face and how important they are, then I think that might help move the needle for him. Because for every patient that's in the hospital and is suffering from COVID and a unit of plasma is not available for them, the likelihood of them recovering from this horrible virus is diminished greatly. So I would just say, ask him to look at it from that perspective. And, you know, and if he needs a little bit more encouragement, tell him I'd love to have a cup of coffee with him and maybe tell him some stories of some people's lives who have been impacted. And like Barbara, I tell you, when you see Barbara and the big smile on her face and to see her two daughters, oh my God, two of the most beautiful girls I think I've ever laid my eyes on. And for them to not have a father in their life because of COVID, I can't even imagine that. And to know that their dad is still alive today with the, you know, it's not to take the place of all the healthcare professionals who took care of him. You know, we all play our part. But I'm so glad that the person who donated convalescent plasma for George did so, because I tell you, those two girls, they love their dad, and he makes a big difference in their life. So that's what I would say for your son. Let's see. Yes, so like Frank, my family's happy to speak. So that must be... that's Barbara. So Barbara, thank you. I appreciate that. You can tell the story firsthand.
And Frank is a big donor. After our meetings, he goes down the hall and donates blood.
Thank you, Frank. All right. Is there, Linda, are you seeing any question that I haven't answered?
I don't have my chat box open, Malcolm, Melissa. Now, what I'd like to do, it's about time for us to meet the next person, but what I'd like to do is challenge people. I made the promise, and I will fulfill that promise. As soon as we're through with this, I will call the blood bank and make an appointment to go get blood drawn, okay?
Thank you.
You can look at the log and see. Do you have, are most of the blood banks doing remote collections? I know that you were doing it out at the Wonderland, Morgan's
blood drives?
Wonderland.
Yes.
Yeah, blood drives, yeah.
So, you know, as you and many of the people who are part of the think tank, before COVID, for the pandemic, about 70% of all the blood that we collected was at mobile blood drives. So essentially we had our bus or trucks and we would go out to businesses, to faith-based organizations, mm-hmm. and to schools to collect blood. Well, that has flipped. And now about 52% of all the blood we collect is actually in our donor rooms, one of our donor rooms, or and the other 48% is still on the mobile collections. However, we're really challenged. Many organizations have not gone back to having their employees back in the office yet. And I think the story about schools opening and colleges, it's still pretty much a back and forth on that. And I think it's going to continue to be that way for a while. The impact that it's having on the blood supply is significant. And in fact, last weekend we still are under an appeal. We're sending out about 320 to 350 units of blood every day, and we're collecting much less than that. And so right now we're depending on other blood centers and other communities to help provide blood to our community. And you know, as a native-born Texan, that just doesn't sit very well. We take care of our own, right? That's what being in this part of the United States is about. And of course, you know, if I was in Iowa or New York, they'd say the same thing, but I'm not there, I'm here. And so there's been a lot of folks like Bob McCullough that have been stepping up every 8 weeks to donate blood. And then there's a lot of people who haven't been stepping up at all. And so we're challenged right now because we can't go out into the community with blood drives to the places that we used to go before. So for those of you that are listening in, please think about the organizations, your companies, your schools, places that we could have blood drives, and let us know. Give us a call and let us know. Help us orchestrate some new and innovative blood drives so that we don't have these kinds of challenges. One more thing, and I haven't mentioned this before, but to find out more about who we are, what we do, where you can go, about convalescent plasma, some more stories like Barbara and her husband's, Brothers in Arms, go to our website, southtexasblood.org. And I can tell you, if you go to our website this week, and then you go to our website maybe the end of next week, they'll look very different. We're really excited about, don't tell anybody, but we're launching a new website. And so we're really excited about that. But southtexasblood.org, you can find out everything you need to know about us, about where to go and donate, the hours of operations, the criteria to be a blood donor, the criteria to be a convalescent plasma donor. It's all there.
Okay, I think it's about time for you to introduce our mystery guest. I see him online.
Yes, okay. One quick answer to a question, and then I'll introduce the mystery guest. Someone asked about a compromised immune system. Go to our website. It depends on what type of issue it is, but I would say if you're not feeling well and healthy and you feel like you're under the weather, whether it's because your immune system, you've got an autoimmune disease, or you're just feeling bad, you need to take care of yourself always first and foremost, because you can't help others until you make sure you help yourself first. So take care of yourself first. There's lots of folks to step up. And so just take care of yourself. All right. So big news. I have the pleasure of working with an extraordinary group of professionals, and none is quite as extraordinary as our CEO, Marty Landon. Marty Landon has been part of our organization for, gosh, I think it's 5 years now. It seems like I've always known him, but he's been part of our organization for a while now, and has been very instrumental in helping us communicate or connect with folks throughout the community, partnerships, collaborations that go well beyond just what we do on a daily basis. And as a result of that, he's got some extraordinary news to share about an incredible partnership with, I think, some people that you will already know their names and go, wow, this is tremendous. So Marty, you want to take it away and tell us about our next great adventure?
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth. And today is actually my fourth anniversary with the organization. And it's gone by more quickly than I could have ever imagined. Before I tell you what we got going on, Frank, one other thing to add to what Elizabeth said, and I thought it was really good what she said, is I think of donors as heroes. And, you know, in today's younger generation, a lot of them want to make a difference in the world, right? Whether that be from an ecology standpoint or otherwise. And you probably already know this, but I would tell you that donors really are heroes. And Linda, when you go and sign up to give blood today, you're going to be a hero again, because you really are a hero to that person who's receiving that blood transfusion or those platelets or that plasma. If you talk to these people after they have received one of these things, it is truly life-saving or life-giving. And you really do become their hero. So if one of these younger generation want to say, I did something during my time on this earth that was meaningful, this is it. I mean, you can do it so fast. Within an hour, you can truly have changed somebody's life. You've either enhanced it or extended it by giving that gift. And we'll take great care of it if they'll give it. And in the case of convalescent plasma, the difference is so acute, right? These are people who are on ventilators and in induced comas who all of a sudden improve. And as Elizabeth said, there's more clinical evidence to be gathered and analyzed. But this is one way for your son or anybody to truly be a hero in somebody's life. So I just add that to it. And saving lives never gets old. That's been my experience. I was 20 years at KCI, roughly. They kicked me out right before 20 years. But anyway, 20, 25 years in this healthcare space and saving lives, I will tell you, never gets old. And we think that this thing that I'm going to tell you about, that many of you probably already heard about maybe, is another way of saving lives. And we're very honored to be partnering with Graham Weston and Tullis Wells and Bruce Bug from the 80-20 Foundation, the Kronkowski Foundation, and the Tobin Endowment, respectively, to be partnered with them in the creation and operation of Community Labs. Community Labs was formed for the purpose of COVID-19 screening or testing of asymptomatic population pools to identify and quarantine silent spreaders of the virus. People who have no symptoms, they don't know they're carrying around the virus, but they have the potential to infect others. So working with UT Health and the great collaboration there and others in the community, and following the example that was established by the Eli Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard, we've put together a testing facility to do rapid PCR testing of micropopulations like schools, businesses, community groups to identify and contain asymptomatic carriers of the virus. There was a press release on this, I think, around September 16th or 17th. That was followed by a Wall Street Journal article, if you're interested in learning more. This was certainly the brainchild of Graham. But the goal, of course, would be to kind of do full testing of these micropopulations to create COVID safety zones, if you will, through what they term as accelerated pandemic suppression system. And a goal of perhaps reaching at some point in time up to 100,000 people a day. So when Elizabeth talks about, multifacets of addressing this virus, vaccines, adequate testing, that's what she's talking about. This is part of that adequate testing effort. As I said, the effort was the brainchild of Graham Weston, who serves on the governor's COVID-19 task force along with Bruce Bug. And this effort has been fully supported by a combination of those three outstanding foundations. What we've brought to the table, BioBridge Global, has been expertise, know-how through our Qualtex testing organization, equipment, of course, and a well-trained labor force. We've started with the ability to collect and test about 1,000 people a day. And we'll ramp that up over the next 4 to 6 weeks to roughly 10 to 12,000 tests per day. Now you think about that, that compares favorably to the county. Bexar County currently is testing around 3,500 people a day. So just by opening up, we've increased that by 1,000 tests a day. And importantly, it's at a greatly reduced cost. Each testing line that we would add, what they're calling pods, of course, would increase that capacity by another 10 to 12,000 tests per day. So this is, as I said, part of that multifaceted battle to treat this coronavirus. And that includes the treatments that so important, one including COVID convalescent plasma that Elizabeth was just speaking to earlier. Our first test was conducted about 2 weeks ago on approximately 100 BioBridge Global employees, including me, where we saw how simple it was to do the self-swabbing. So it's a looks like a Q-tip with one end cut off. You do 5 second swab in each nostril, kind of in the lower part of the nostril, not the one that goes up and scratches your brain, but just real simple. In 10 or 15 seconds, you've collected your sample. And then we ran those tests. And by doing that, of course, we kind of allowed ourselves to improve our process before we did our first live test. And our first live testing took place last week at Somerset Independent School District. And we tested a little over 200 faculty, staff, and students there on the campus of Somerset. That testing went very well. And just this morning, we're back out there again. And this time we are testing around 500 faculty, staff, and students. And those tests are going on right now. I've been upstairs and they're running those tests right now. And just to give you a sense for rapid turnaround, So we tested our group twice. I was in both of those tests. The second time we did those tests, I collected my sample at 11 a.m. and they sent me the result by 5 p.m. So 6 hours later, I had the result. We of course think that doing this testing will allow increased and safe in-person learning, which is kind of the early goal of Graham's program. On the campus of the school district, and just kind of FYI, that school district has a population of about 4,000 people. So hopefully we will help those kids and those parents feel good about sending their kids back to campus. We're excited to see this type of testing expand rapidly. Just as the Broad Institute didn't hold it under a blanket, we're not trying to do that either. The group's vision is to have it expand. I would say that having gone through that testing now twice and received my negative reports, and knowing and having other people working around me testing negative, it gave me a sense of kind of comfort in being at the office. And I felt like I was in a safe environment. So in terms of the concept, I think it's hugely exciting, and we're really glad to be a part of it. We're glad to be a part of anything as an organization where we can be part of a collaborative effort to bring new innovations to the practice of medicine, like COVID convalescent plasma, like rapid testing of asymptomatic populations. So for us, this was kind of right up our alley in terms of what we do from a mission standpoint. It was fantastic, and we're glad to be a part of it. And I'll take any questions if there are questions. I see the question on the PCR results back. Yeah, like I said, I tested at 11, and I had my response back at 5 p.m., so 6 hours in that particular case. But the what we're telling people is that you'll have your response in 24 hours.
I think that's great. And I understand, Marty, that you're planning on taking this to Governor Abbott and letting him know what's happening. Is that correct?
I know that Graham and Bruce have both been in regular contact with the governor. And let me say this, and Elizabeth was bragging on Texas, as she should, and I don't like to pick fights or brag on South Texas too much, but I will tell you that this was offered not only to people living in South Texas and organizations in South Texas, but also well-recognized and known organizations in North Texas who said, yeah, that's interesting, but we're not sure that can be done. So here in San Antonio, that can-do attitude that we have, that y'all have, is coming to bear, and we got this done. And the governor was very happy and very proud. But he did tell Graham the day that it was announced in Austin, he said, Graham, don't screw this up.
Have you captured any positive results, Annie asks.
So it worked exactly as we thought it would. We, in fact, did find in the first sample, I don't know about today, But in the first sample at Somerset, we found one positive, and that person was able to be quarantined. And the rest of those 200 plus folks knew that they weren't carrying the virus, they didn't have it, and they could go back to school.
And Anthony asks, who is the lab that is delivering the results?
So we are the lab. So we've established this laboratory here on our campuses, basically in a portion of our Qualtex testing laboratory. So then we're providing those answers, particularly if they're positive, not only to the person who got tested, but also to Metro Health.
All right, we're about out of town. Isn't that exciting? And we hope that this spreads like wildfire through Texas and potentially the country.
We do indeed.
Okay, thanks to everybody. And Marty, thanks for joining us and being our mystery speaker at the end with good news, with wonderful news. Elizabeth, you did a marvelous job. And I would challenge people to call as soon as you can your particular community blood bank and go be a hero.
Thank you, Linda.
Okay.
Perfect. Thanks, all right. Linda.
Have a great rest of the week. I think bye-bye. They call it hump day. So we're on the downside of the hump. Okay. Bye-bye, all.
Bye now.
Bye.